Hi, and welcome to She's the Boss Chats. I'm your host, Jules Brook, and in the show, I interview amazing women and female founders about what it is that they're doing and why they're doing it. It's all about us lifting up the women around us. Hi, Anne. I'm really, really excited. This is the first of the She's the Boss podcasts, and I'm just really excited to be having you as my guest. So, everybody, I'm very, as I've said three times now, excited to have Anne Miles with me. Anne owns her own business and is a female founder and is really one of my heroes, because she really, really knows her stuff. She calls herself a nerd, which is the opposite of what I am, obviously. So being super cool, that is, rather than non-tech. So, the first thing is, Anne, welcome.
Hello, thank you.
Thank you so much. So good to be here. Yeah, no, it's great to have you here. Now, tell us a little bit about your business.
So I have a business that has a fun name to start with. It's called Suits and Sneakers.
Great. And what are the suits and what are the sneakers? Why did you call it that?
So it's the suits are strategists and smart account directors and people who just get things done in marketing and advertising.
Right.
And the sneakers are creative tech and production people.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So that sort of makes sense. And so what do Suits and Sneakers do?
Yeah, it's a really eclectic lot. So there's nothing in marketing that we can't help with.
Wow, that's a big end call. To end.
Yeah, it's a very big call.
Right.
So there's only one thing we don't do.
So
it's pretty much like anything from research, brand strategy, marketing planning, digital strategy, right through to creative concepts, just getting campaigns done.
And then project management as well, which is the suits, I guess, because I was a suit once in my deep and dark past, I think.
Yeah.
I was an account director for graphic design companies here and then in London. Well, mainly in London and then here, actually, the other way around. But it's a skill, I think, that's you know, quite specialised to be able to manage a project and keep within budget. And, of course, also manage the creatives and keep everyone happy.
It is actually a really interesting job, and I think that's, I enjoy it a lot, and over the years I started in production, so that's basically project management, and it is one foot in, you know, the maths and science and getting shit done, and the other half is very creative.
And so trying to really sort of like balance it. The two. Yeah, no, I love it. Mm. So you've set up this company that can help any business, it doesn't matter what size they are.
That's right.
To so it's sort of like an outsourced marketing department, or on a project basis, or you know, you suddenly realize that you've got too much work on and you need someone to come and help you, and you can grab them, and it's all around marketing and advertising and creativity and all those sorts of things.
That's
just
right.
in case people don't know. So so you've got Suits and Sneakers. And I'm going to ask you in a minute, or a little bit later, I'll ask you about your grand plans, because I know you've got
some grand plans.
But let's start at the beginning. Why did you set it up?
What's your why? Yeah. I think if I can be honest, I just actually got really pissed off because...
Sounds fair enough to me.
Yeah.
And in that industry, as women, I think it can be very stressful and pissy-offty.
Yeah, definitely.
That's such a word.
I think... Especially our generation of women, there just weren't women role models, and there was an opportunity. And I reckon I left every single job I've ever had through discrimination or just being overlooked. You know, someone less qualified than me got the gig because they happen to be a bloke who's mates with somebody.
It's really sort of female unfriendly, isn't it? And it was, particularly when we were younger.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm
sure it's a bit better now, but I'd like to think.
It was terrible. No. Like, I've had my boss's penis on my shoulder.
Oh,
I've been pushed over and someone sat on me on the floor and, you know, things thrown at me. Like, really, really bad. And, you know,
it's a little bit like the sexual harassment things that are going on now for actors.
Mm.
I think same thing. It's an industry where it's expected that you can kind of push the boundaries and tease people and not realise how hurtful some of that can be and how oppressive it is.
Mm. No, that's right. It is sort of hard. That's a good topic for a conversation sometime is, you know, do you think that from the past when people have done terrible things, you know, how much are they accountable now?
Well, that's right. Yeah. Should it be judged with today's lenses?
Yeah.
Or the lenses that were then, which is,
it's a very challenging.
We will have that conversation.
Yeah.
But keep telling me a little bit more. So why did you set this up? So you'd had shit jobs, basically, or great jobs that great had ended in a way that you weren't happy with. And so what made you think suits and sneakers?
So I think, like, over the years, I was very lucky, actually. I was given a really amazing opportunity really young. So at 21, I was head of TV in a big ad agency. So that meant I was running a department.
How did you even swing that? How did that happen? Because that is incredibly young.
And it was actually offered to me when I was 20 years old, but I said, no way, I couldn't. What were they thinking?
Too scary.
Yeah, too scary. You know, that was such a responsibility. And then they hired someone else who actually was a woman at the time.
Right.
Oh, she's still a woman.
No, but I mean, but how great in that industry to have someone as a woman, as you know, that you could kind of watch what she did. And
that's right. It was good. Yeah. And she just got fed up with it after 6 months and said, look, I'm going, but I'm telling you, you should take the job. She said, you're already doing the job really anyway. And, you know, just give it a go this time.
And so how did you feel when she said that? You went up for, you were like, okay, I'm up for it.
Seriously, if it wasn't for her, I wouldn't have.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have felt up for it. So I'm forever grateful for that opportunity. And so I got really in the deep end there. So I guess we're coming to overall, like, why I do what I want. So in some of these agencies, because I was so young with such a responsibility, I was really looking for a stretch.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to be in the same job for the whole of my life. I was quite ambitious.
Yeah.
And so I saw myself on the board one day and running a company, right?
Fantastic, yeah.
And so I did things to help myself, like I did management training and all sorts of leadership training.
Yeah.
And once there was a trainer that said to my boss, there's someone in this room who should be your next CEO. And the managing director goes,
tell me. Yeah.
And then the trainer goes, Anne Miles, as if it was normal to him.
Yeah.
And my boss goes, oh, but she's a woman.
He did not say, I just can't believe that he actually said that.
Isn't that horrendous? I was so deflated.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't brought up like this. Like, I was brought up on a farm. But both my parents, you know, they were very inclusive. You know, we all just worked together on the farm. There wasn't any male, female kind of.
Yeah, I was pretty much the same. I mean, I think I was brought up that there is, you can do whatever you want to do. You just have to work hard at it, you know. Yeah. And then to have people creating obstacles in front of you.
Yeah.
When you're going, hang on a minute. Yes, I am a woman, but I can't actually change that bit. Yeah. So, like, you know, pick on something else that's, you know, possible for me to improve on. Or
it'd be different if you were actually not good at your job. But then if someone tells you this is the person who's got the
leadership
potential.
And this is a subjective or objective person that has come out of the blue, assessed everything and gone, here's your person. And he just said, oh, so what happened?
Well, I just went, oh, well, stuff here, I'm out of here. And so then I just went and found another job, and then similar happened and similar happened. And it, you know, it even happened up until the last few years, you know, still in modern times. I got blanked in a meeting by my boss when I raised something. Then he called the meeting over.
Yeah.
And wanted everyone to leave the room. And then I saw him trying to have a separate meeting without me there. And I went, oh, hang on a minute, he's having a meeting about my job. So I come back in and I hear him raising my point to the room. As if it was his idea. And worse still, everyone else in the room pretended like they'd never heard it before. And I just went, right, oh, my God, that is it.
So was that kind of like the, I don't want to say light bulb moment, but the pivotal moment where you just went, I can't deal with this anymore.
Yeah, it was. I'm going to go out on my own. I'm going to do my own.
And the other thing, though, that you've mentioned to me before is the ageism in the industry. And I think I'd really like to touch on that, because there'll probably be women listening that will really relate to the fact, you know, and it's, I think, become incredibly prevalent, and I don't really understand why.
I know.
That if you are really over 45 or 50, then, you know, the little youngies out there in recruitment go, oh, no, you're too old, that's it.
I know, it's horrendous when you absolutely know you're at the top of your
game. Absolutely.
Like, I look at what you're doing and I go, you're at the top of your game.
And I
feel like I am. I'm more creative than I've ever been. You know,
Got more drive, got more, and we've got all that experience. And so also, if something goes wrong, we're not going to panic. We're just going to go, okay.
We go, oh, that's like,
how can I work around that?
Yeah, I've seen that before, and if I put that problem with a bit of this and that and mix up the new pot, then, and you're quite quick at dealing with things as well. Yeah, well, part of the solution, I was, you know, heading out with my own business, and I hadn't quite figured all of it out, I think, if I was honest, and I was sort of building it. And I saw an trade publication in our industry, and it had five really senior people from one of the big ad agencies, all retrenched. And I looked at the photo and every one of them had grey hair.
Ugh.
And I noticed that in London and in other offices, they yes. just culled. It's almost like automatically said anyone over 40, let's just get
rid
of them.
I couldn't agree more. I'm seeing it everywhere yeah. amongst guys that I know that have been, you know, heads of, mm-hmm. you know, the head of sales or the head of marketing for companies being mm-hmm. retrenched. And then they keep looking and they keep looking. And my brother had something similar and it ends up being mm-hmm. 18 months of looking. And then mm-hmm. you end up getting a job that's half the salary or whatever. And you're just mm-hmm. like, this is just insane. So, I mean, yeah. I'm predicting that there'll be a whole lot of people our age that'll all set up their own businesses, I think.
Yeah.
I witnessed the mumpreneur kind of surge that happened when everyone realised that they couldn't have babies and work full time. Yeah. So I'm going to go out on my own. That happened in around when I had my twins. That was sort of the early 2000s, I would say. Mm. And I reckon, watch this space, that's what's going to happen with all of us
definitely,
our age
yeah.
now.
Because I think so, yeah.
If you can't get a job, then why not go out on your own? You've got loads yeah. of experience. You know what you're talking yeah. about.
And you're also, I think also you can see through the gaps a lot
that's
more.
That's right.
And
right.
some of the other bigger businesses don't care about those standards anymore. It's really about, I'd say it's really about getting the timesheets charged. So
yes,
load up
you
people.
Mentioned that the other day. So talk to me a little bit about that because I read an article. You did an article about that
I
on
did,
LinkedIn
yeah.
this week as well, didn't you? So it's about the way that agencies are charging and all the wastage that there is
yeah.
that big businesses and any business, I guess, isn't realising if you go to an agency. Well, you take over from here.
It is
well,
a bit of a pet hate of mine, I'll have to say,
well,
for a few reasons. So
here
one
is the time
is,
to air it.
Yeah, have a bit of a rant. I actually, for the sake of agencies, would like them to change it too.
Yes.
Because if agencies don't have people in the workforce, there's about, for every one in an agency, there's about 17 people across the industry who are impacted. So
right.
we've really got to get it right as
yeah.
an industry. So I sound like I'm bagging agencies. I'm not. I'm actually bagging the way they're working and I want it to shift. Because currently what they're doing is it's all about the return on the hour.
So billable hours. It's
billable
like lawyers
hours,
where,
yep.
where they want to go.
Yeah.
You know, okay, so how does that actually
yeah.
impact? So if you're a brand, you've employed an agency where, and you know, you've agreed to what I personally think is like, a kind of a budget, but let's say you've yeah. agreed to 50, 100 grand, whatever it might be to do a few months on the campaign. How is it really being spent?
Because the way they work is that there's a whole process, set process in the way that they work, and they layer up with lots and lots of different people from silos across the business.
Right.
So number one, there's a whole lot of people that you don't necessarily need on the job.
So what you mean by that is that someone from production and someone from account service and someone
yeah.
from media buying and two
yeah.
creatives and whatever
and
are all in a meeting where they don't necessarily need to be there at that stage.
When I was
billable.
On the client side, I was in a meeting and I counted up the head hours of the meeting and it was like $30,000 for that meeting, of which no outcome was agreed.
Oh,
and I went,
goodness.
You know what, that's water for 8,333 people.
That's just a
that's
whole other world to the world I'm in
yeah.
where they're going, $3,000? I can't afford $3,000. Can you do it for $1,000? And you just think, my God, there's a massive gap.
It's very bad. And I did do some coaching of creative businesses on profitability and efficiencies and things like that for years. And one of the problems that the whole system has got is that they're actually rewarded for bad process. And so they downscale the talent and they don't care if it takes a lot of time
I have to keep, what's the word for it, translating. So downscaling the talent, what you mean is they're putting the juniors in there.
Juniors
yeah, right.
who, and it's not necessarily the age, but it's the capability.
It's the experience.
Well. They don't have the experience. And there might be a real little genius somewhere along the line, but generally.
You'd be lucky.
they haven't had the exposure, they haven't been taught yet.
Yeah.
So they're pretty, average. So it's really frustrating, actually. So they're layering up lots and lots of people and, lots and lots of silos. And there's that multi-talented, experienced person isn't valued in that network.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
when you and I did a mathematical comparison. I'm seriously nerdy now, aren't I?
No, you're allowed to. But so what you're saying is if you had somebody who was pretty good at all those skills, you could have had a meeting with two people.
Yep.
You know, or the
done.
Client and two people, and
yeah.
we go, okay, one of us is taking notes, the other one is having a chat with you.
Yeah.
We will then go and brief all those people, and then we'll pull in the ones that are relevant rather than let's all have 15 of us in a meeting and spend $30,000 while we work out what we want to do.
And they run the same process regardless.
Right.
So for me, that's one of the things that I'm really enjoying doing differently is I handpick the solution for the client.
Yep.
And clients also in a survey said that they don't feel that there's category experience behind any of the work that they're getting done as well. So I'm going, okay, I'm going to give you category experience.
So category experience, again, I'm going to translate, is retail or beauty or consumer goods or business to business or whatever. Okay,
Something specific to their business.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, and so that's just not really available. So they don't get
people that have any experience in that either.
No. So I'm going, nah.
So that was your moment. So
yeah.
So, and was it that meeting that was the moment where you walked away and went, right, that's it, I'm setting up something on my own? Or was there some other moment?
And then the moment when I saw the five grey-haired people, I went, what's going to happen to those people?
Yeah.
I'm going, they're going to be lost to the industry now, and clients actually want their experience.
I agree. That's the stupid thing. It's like if the client knew that they were available and they had all that experience, they'd want them in a heartbeat.
Yeah, well, that's the moment. And I was actually sitting at my desk and I saw that and I thought to myself, where are they going to be? No one will find them because there's no outlet for people like that. And I went, right, that's it. And I said it out loud like that and I went, that's the moment.
Right.
Because
there is always a moment. There is a moment. Yeah. I can remember my moments as well where you just kind of go, yep, that's it. Okay, so tell me about your career path.
Yeah.
Because I think there would be younger women listening that might like, and I'm going to do this with everyone in the podcast from now on, but I reckon I know personally, being the nosy person that I am, that I want to know how when you leave school and you've got one idea, you end up doing something else another, say, 20 or 30 years later. So can you take us on that journey a little bit and
explain I love that.
What that was like?
I love hearing about this. Too. I know. You go, how did that happen?
That's right. And
especially for me, like I was a dairy farmer's daughter and to get into advertising, like what? How did that happen, you know?
Well, that's right. And I think as a young girl, you might, or a young woman, you might be looking at these people. They look at people like us and they go, oh, they're incredibly successful and they must have had just this easy path. But they don't realise how wiggledy that word, that line is to get from A to B. So anyway, go on.
That's right. And
off you go. Tell us what happened. So you're a dairy farmer's daughter.
And then my dad was actually quite involved in dairy farm politics. So he was sitting on a board of the Victorian Dairy Industry Authority.
Yeah.
And they were doing the Big M launch back then, the chocolate milk. Do you remember? Yes. Well, it was only chocolate. Now it's a whole lot of
chocolate. Was it only chocolate? Did it Big M start as chocolate?
Yeah.
Right. I just remember the ads in the 70s were huge. Oh, they were. There was like Coke, really. Big M and Coke. It was girls in bikinis and boys down the beach.
I know. Look at me, the advocate for women's rights now. And I was brought into the industry, like looking at the whole Big M. But
that's how ads always were in those days. It was like, put a girl in a bikini and that's how you sell a car or a drink or anything.
It was too. So then we went to the careers advisor at the school, and because I was quite creative as well, and then I thought that would be fun. I said, so we said, how do you get into this world of advertising stuff? Anyway, so then my careers advisor said, well, your dad's got this job. See if he's can get the ad agency to give you some work experience.
Okay, good, clever.
And that's how it started.
Yeah.
And then I applied to go to RMIT for their advertising course.
Yeah.
And that was like only a year at the time, and then there was some part-time as well. And
that was a diploma, was it?
I think it was a degree.
I think it was a diploma. I reckon we might have been at school at almost the same time, and I was at RMIT as well.
Yeah, because and the whole PR and media were all in the same faculty. Yeah, they were,
down that little funny laneway.
Yeah, it has to be.
Yes.
It's funny, yeah. And then after that, I was such a suck. Oh, my God. I sent this resume out to all the big ad agencies and it was like an inch thick. Oh, and it had like all assignments and all sorts of stuff. Oh, my God.
Were you like a head girl or something at school as
well? Yeah, I was one of those sucks, you know, like always the A student and all that sort of daggy stuff.
You're a good girl.
But never quite as good as my girlfriend. She was always just one, you know, bit ahead.
Is she still a girlfriend now?
I can't say it so much. We're quite different now, I think.
Yeah, but she
and I think my life's gone in so many different ways.
Well, it's funny, isn't it, as you get older and how life goes. But anyway, so you left school, that's how I got into
That's how I got into the agency world. And then because there was this, like, vertical limit, you know, I couldn't get any higher than the job I was in.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, well, I need the stimulation, and these guys are idiots because they're spitting on me and blowing snot out of their nose in the boardroom and terrible behaviour. So terrible.
Stupid boy, baby stupid. Boy. Stupid.
It was so really disgusting. So then I moved to another agency. It was actually lovely, and even the head of Ford at one point, I was presenting a budget. This is worth me telling you. So when I was at the first agency, I'd said to a client, just in fleeting, oh, I've got a few options here. I'm not sure what to show you.
Yeah.
As you sort of chit chat.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, why don't you show me your tits then?
Oh, like charming.
Charming. Just... And of course, they're in the boardroom with beer all over the table at 11 in the morning.
And you can't at that stage when you're going for a job go, only if you take your dick out first.
Yeah.
Or something equally as provocative, because it's just ridiculous.
Right.
Anyway.
So then I went to the new agency and the head of Ford goes, oh, I said, you know, we've got a few options and here's some choices for you. And instead of saying, show me your tits, he said, what do you think, Anne? And I went, oh, my God.
You're valuing my
this
opinion.
Is the best account I've ever worked on. Right. So this was Ford. I loved it. I've actually got a lot of automotive experience over the years. That was awesome. And so same thing along the way. I just really ran out of the vertical options.
Yeah.
So I then left and opened a film company.
Right.
I worked with a director that I'd worked with as a client, and then we partnered up and had a company called Exit Films.
And this film company, I presume, was still, you're still in the advertising industry. So this is films for...
Yeah, just for ads.
For ads.
Yeah, that's right. And so after, probably, again, I was working with someone whose behaviour wasn't really aligned with mine. And, you know, it's successful.
You've just
successful
had this bummer,
business.
But it's the industry you were in.
It's
it's
too.
Sexist anyway.
And I think I'm just, now just have like a zero tolerance for that stuff.
And when you're young and you're starting out, you have a lot more tolerance because you're like, I just don't want to stuff up this job completely, so I can't say, put it back in your pants.
And you don't really know that you actually have an option. So I think if we're having a message for younger girls about the trajectory over the years, I think I left to go sideways and I guess I left opportunity. Most people, I think, you do well when you stick at something and you can keep persevering and
go higher creep and up, higher and higher.
Go higher.
Yeah.
And I guess I sort of went, well, stuff yet. You know, there's no room for me. I'm moving on. And there wasn't any resource or help that I could call on. But these days I think people could ask for that help.
Yes.
And go to
and also
management.
There is now a law that says you can't say those sorts of things to people and get away with it. So you actually you would have some recourse. But back in those days we had none.
No. And even if you threaten legal action or even work.
Well then you just get a bad
existing.
Name as being that woman who's a troublemaker.
That is dead right.
You know?
And so not right.
And exactly, but you know your career's kind of gonna be stuffed if you go down that route as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then where did I go? So film company. Then I left, did some freelancing and had children.
Yeah.
And when my young one was quite young, 4 months, my husband at the time wasn't working so much, so I had to go and figure something out.
Right.
So I ended up taking my baby to work in another film company as well. She was amazing.
How did that go down?
Wow, it's pretty interesting, but she was such a good baby. Like I was... Second time round, you get really good
at teaching them how to,
this is your turn to sleep was such a bossy moment.
I remember I was working for a graphic design company that had never had any, it was about 40 years old. They'd never had anyone who was pregnant ever work in the company.
Oh.
And I remember coming back to work after 6 weeks after my first son was born.
Wow.
And had to, in order to get back to work, you have to do the pumping of the milk.
Oh, yeah.
And they just put something on the tea room door that said milk pumping station or something and would leave me in there and I'd just do it thinking, God, please don't let anyone walk in.
Yeah, that'd be really challenging. And I was feeding Nina during the job as well, and we sort of just timed meetings around, and thank goodness the director I was working with, he was such a lovely, inclusive guy, and he was really supportive. He just wanted me there and made it work.
I had a fantastic GM.
It was so good.
At my one. Yeah. So you've done all of this, and at what stage then, where are we at now in terms of suits and sneakers?
Coming up near the end there, so the freelancing, and then I went into a post-production house, which was like pretty chaotic.
Okay.
So
you've got this film theme all the way through, really. So it was always about video and
that's right.
visuals.
And then I was in a visual effects house. This was the next one. And I was in there and I'm going, oh, my God, the way they're running this company, they are going to go broke. This is terrible. I feel like I'm the only one who's making any profit on my jobs. And, you know, if it wasn't for me, I'm going, how are they making money?
Yeah.
And I felt like I could see something and I was the only one who could see it. And there was some bad behaviour there as well. And funny enough, after I left, they did go broke.
Right.
So I was going, I could see that. You know,
the writing on the wall, yeah.
So what I learned in that moment is I could see things that other people couldn't see. in
and
the
not
way.
To question yourself.
That's right. Yeah. So then I went and qualified as a business coach and I retrained in marketing.
Yeah.
Also, I knew at that point I was coming up to 40.
Yeah.
And like the industry just doesn't have a home for you when you're 40.
It's it amazes me. I just wonder whether 20 years from now, you know, there will be agencies that are manned almost exclusively by older people with loads of experience.
If they change the way they bill, I can actually think they could be like that.
Yeah. Well, something's going to have to give. I mean, you know, everything is, you know, for anyone who is listening to this, we're recording this during COVID, during the isolation. And I have a firm belief that we're going to come out of this and there's going to be some dramatic changes. So
yeah. Some I'm excited about too, actually. Yes.
And I actually think that... some of the things that we're hearing about guys who are very senior at work having to look after their kids and realising what a job it is, I think might also change their attitudes towards women.
I think so, yeah,
totally. And I mean, if you think about a woman who stayed home looking after their kids, they are so good at multitasking, they're so good at being tolerant, they're so good at project management. It's crazy to do, you know.
And at the same time, there are also guys who've wanted that opportunity as well, right?
Absolutely,
and, they could finally get
it. Sorry, I don't want to...
No, you're very inclusive, so I regret it, but and I know this is what you mean too. Yeah, so where did we get to?
So we got to... So then you set up suits and sneakers. Tell me... Along your career and also particularly in your entrepreneurial journey, because that's where I particularly... Can you tell me some pivotal moments? Have there been a moment where you just kind of went, yes, oh my God, yes, this is why I do this job?
Yeah.
And another moment you can think of that would be, you know, yuck, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? I'm questioning everything. But let me start with a success. Have you had a...
It's kind of a back to front
really
one.
Really positive,
that's coming to my mind.
Yeah.
Because I'm very ethics driven in the world. I'm a conscious capitalist and I volunteered to run conscious capitalism in Australia and New Zealand for about 18 months. And, you know, I'm just tired now, so let's just do my own thing. And so I'm kind of driven by those values.
Yes.
And I had a client that had a brewery. Did I say that right? Brewery.
Yes, you did. By the way, we are having champagne at the same time.
Coming out. And anyway, so he came and he says, I'm currently spending, you know, like $10,000 a month with this ad agency.
Yeah.
And it's not working and I think I need some help to do new creative or whatever. And I looked at it and I went, oh, I'd love $10,000 a month. You know, really. I'm a startup and it's, you know, early days in the business, but I looked at it and I went, I just can't ethically take his money.
Right.
He didn't need new creative and even a new social media campaign. It was nothing was going to work because he didn't have a retail strategy and he actually couldn't handle the volume.
So he had products, but he just had no strategy around them at
he
all.
He had no sort of operational...
No scaling of ability. Like he was staying home and putting them all in envelopes, stuffing them with envelopes himself in the evening or something.
And also he was expecting people were going to buy a six-pack of beer and have it shipped to them. There's no way that someone would do that because it's just not a good...
Not unless it's funny because I worked with a company called Brewtopia, and Brewtopia were custom label beer, and so you could get them done for your 21st, or you could get them with your mum's face on them, or whatever. They delivered, and I was just going to say, if it's special, people will pay for that delivery, but not just your standard normally beer.
No, so that was a real ethical moment for me, and ironically, I ended up eating white bread for 4 days or something. You know, it was like I had toast for every meal for 4 days because I was so broke, but I just still couldn't have done it. So that was probably, you know, I really enjoyed the fact that I was actually
able to say no and doing the right
thing
ethically.
Yeah. And then there's probably other times where I've just gone, this is just the why I do this. You know, I'm sitting with a bunch of creative people, and even if it's virtually, you know, we're brainstorming and I'm
so
doing
you
this bit,
still manage
doing
the teams. So do you kind of, so you would be at the sort of, if it was a virtual table, at the head of the table helping manage them. So, so they get
and
your skills as well.
As well. Yeah. So, because I'm half a creative person.
Yes, of course.
I might just go, what do you think of this or that or da da da? And it might be the catalyst to something. And
sometimes
they might go, that's pretty terrible, Anne. I'll go, oh, okay, right.
But if they can say that, that's also a great place to be that
it
people
is,
can say, actually, you know what?
Yeah.
Go back and think again.
Yeah. That's right.
So, tell me about your life, as in your personal life, and how you are juggling work, because as an entrepreneur, her. Mm. How does that, are those lines blurred?
Yeah, I'd say truthfully there isn't not much other than my work. But you know how most people have something on the bucket list, like they want to jump off a mountain, yes, or go in a waterfall or something? I only really have to have a successful international business as my bucket list.
So global domination, here yeah, we come. Absolutely, I'm the same.
Yeah, I'll have to be doing that journey with you. It's really
absolutely
awesome. Because I think, thankfully, we had foresight to create a business model that's actually becoming more relevant now, even yes, accidentally. So it really will drive.
It will, but yeah, let's go back to work-life juggle. I'm really interested. You've just skimmed over that one. Mm. So what do you mean? So when you say work is my life, which I actually 100% completely understand, because it's a blurred line for me as well, because I love it so much.
Yeah.
And so when I wake up on a Sunday morning, if there's some emails there or there's something that I'm doing on Monday, I want to get ahead and do it. But I think you are a little bit more extreme than me.
I am more extreme, I think. And I mean, one, you wouldn't do it if you were working for someone else.
No, of course not. No, thank God. No,
so I hope I'm not advocating that for anyone. But pretty much, you know, I get up in the morning and I'll go do some exercise or whatever. I'll eat breakfast at my desk while the computer's opening up and all of that.
Have you got a dining room table?
I don't. I have a boardroom table in my house. It's not even a... it doesn't even operate like a house, actually.
Yeah, okay.
So it was actually a consulting space that I hired first, and then my kids moved out of home and I thought, why am I paying for this big three-bedroom house and I'm here all the time at the work? So I put a bed in the office and now I've just stay there. So it's 24.
And so how long have you been like this?
I think it's going up to, well, I guess since Suits and Sneakers, it's 2.5 years coming up.
Right.
But I think, and I had sort of other coaching versions. I was a pretty hard worker before, but this is like 100% in, yeah.
So what sort of hours do you work then?
I count at 100 typically. But I also do have time out as well, like Friday night I'll go whoop it up, and I have a bunch of friends that we go out to every Friday night, and it's call it woohoo, we're gonna meet you for a woohoo, you know. So I have that time off, and pretty much bit of exercise, and if something's
I haven't had a holiday. I'm worried for you.
It's partly, I'll be honest, I've had some financial pressure over the years. Yeah, lots of things have gone, which is one of the things about entrepreneurs.
I think that you have, we should say to anyone who might be listening that this is, you really, I mean, I always used to describe it to people that you've got to have nerves of steel. Yeah. Because there have been times in my life where I literally have thought, I don't know how I'm going to pay the mortgage.
Yeah.
And the money has arrived the night before. Because if you believe in it, it does actually turn up. But that's it can be very stressful and very tight, and you do have to make a lot of compromises. But if you're driven, like you are, like I am, we're going, actually, we're on a mission, and it feels good.
It does. And it's like fun, and the money sort of is incidental in a way.
That's right. That's right.
I think if you were smart, you'd have a little bit of a nest egg to give you a bit of a buffer. I guess I started without, you know, having any of the capital behind me or any savings.
I don't think that's unusual for women. Yeah. I mean, you know, and I've worked, I reckon I've worked with about 200 women now that have set up their own business, and I reckon at least half of them haven't had funding. Wow. And I didn't, because if you start an online business, and I had a bit of a moment about 5 years ago where I realised, and I, you know, and I don't want to be sexist about this, but I had a moment where I realised that everyone that comes out of MBAs, and let's be honest, most of those are blokes, they come out with a business plan and they say, right, so the first thing I need to do is raise $1 million and then I'll get going.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, because as a woman, I think a lot of us go, wow, I'm so proud. I've done it on the smell of an oily rag, and I had no startup capital at all, and I've done it on nothing.
Mm.
And actually, maybe we're missing a trick.
I do agree with you, and I think that is just a mindset thing.
Yeah.
And there's enough evidence now that says that if a man, I won't get the numbers exactly right, but in principle, if a guy feels he feels 41% of the job description, he goes, oh, He'll go for it. But we are like 85.
We're like 85, and we're still going, do you think they'll know that I actually haven't been to Saudi Arabia like I said I would? And the guy's gone, You know, I know I'm a used car saleswoman, but I could really go for this CEO role as, and I could just say, yes, I do know sales, and yes, I do know this, and I have got client management. You're like, oh my God, that is so true. That is really so a true.
Terrible thing.
And of course, I forget you're in kind of HR, really, so you'd be used to those. So do you see guys coming across the board and you're like, you're not quite as ace as you think you are, and look at this girl over there that's amazing.
I think that's
saying, oh, you know, I'm not that experienced.
I think that's this whole kind of thing. I've been called the marketing police at some point, and I just go with it now. Yeah.
Yes.
So I think I can really, really see what people's skills really are and, mix it up. So I do really enjoy the finding the right mix of people.
Yeah, and obviously that you're really good at that. And the juggling work and life, well, you know, I mean, you know, my partner always says, you know, you'll have plenty of time to sleep when you're dead. You know, just get on and do it. And yes, there are tired days and yes, there are whatever, but if you are really driven and you're sure that what you're doing is good, then I think it just drives you and you just keep going.
It's funny, I was recording an audiobook the other day and I didn't actually realise how resilient I've become and how I've taught myself to push through the boundaries of my own mind and beliefs and everything. And it's actually a really hard thing to read an audiobook. I don't know if you've ever done it.
I couldn't think of anything worse. I don't even want to read my kids' storybook, so I get it completely.
Oh, it's actually really tough.
You must have been so hoarse. And also, you know, because my partner is an audiobook producer and he talks about voice fatigue. You know, you get to that stage where you go, I can't be all perky like I was at 9 o'clock this morning. This has been going on for hours.
And for me, even worse is that deep concentration, because you sort of have to read ahead and then speak with meaning. So you can get
the inflections in the right place.
Yeah, in the right place. And it's intense concentration. And at one point, I was even starting to get tunnel vision and I was going, push through. And then I had to say politely, I think I'm going to need to just take a little break and get something to eat. And then ate something and I still, massive migraine, and I just pushed through the entire time, and I ended up doing a whole day. And I spoke to my the audio producer afterwards. She said, I can't believe you went the whole day. Not even the professional people go that far. And she went, I said, well, I didn't think there was any option. I just pushed. So...
Isn't that a statement about you straight away, that you'll just keep pushing through even when you're tired and exhausted?
That's it. Mm-hmm.
So now I'm going to just do a little bit of fun stuff, because we're sort of getting towards the end of it. And one of the things that I've done in the She's the Boss lunch that I thought was really fun was started to talk about apps, because I know love apps I love apps as well. I'm probably not going to be able to ask this question of everyone, because I know there's a lot of people that don't. But can you tell me, what do you think, outside of the normal utilities, like in terms of discovering a great app, can you tell me a couple of apps that you found that are super useful?
Yeah. Oh, the one that I think is actually truly the most useful and kind of fun, it's called Word Swag.
Word Swag?
SWAG.
Yeah.
So Word Swag's a, like, for creating social media content.
Yeah.
And it's good when you're just on the run and you just want to, like, say something or a quote or a something like that. And it's actually got all stock images built in, and it's pre-graphic designed.
So what do? So you go into Word Swag, and what, you put in a word of something that you're feeling, you write, and it'll come up with a whole lot of options. Oh, you write your sentence.
Yeah, you write your sentence, and you can even have who's written the quote.
Okay.
And it's often myself, because I go, I remember when I say that thing, you know. And it's nothing better than being completely opinionated and putting it out on social. My absolute
favourite quote that I find all the time on social is Madeleine Albright, who said, there is a special place in hell for women that don't help other women. And I just got that from the beginning, and I've just loved her ever since.
Yeah,
because I think that's true. I think as a species, we've really got to help each other, you know.
Yeah, no, I do agree, actually. Yeah. And I'm a real, like, separate to all of this, totally into trying to change the terrible negative stereotyping that we have out there.
Yeah.
That's, to me, and it's about men too, but ultimately my secret mission is it's really about helping women get things done.
So how do you, let's just diverge for a minute, just, and then you can tell me about other apps as well. But tell me about this gender thing that you're on.
Because unfortunately...
What's it called? Gender what?
Stereotyping.
Gender stereotyping.
Gender is one of them, and there's other stereotyping too.
So it's about disabled people or coloured people or people from different races and people of different abilities.
That's right.
And how they're pigeonholed.
Yeah. And neurodiversity is another part of that for me, and urban.
What's
and
neurodiversity?
Rural. So neurodiversity is partly personality difference,
yeah.
But also some people have psychosocial disability. So that's, you know, your mental health disability, okay. Or intellectual disability, yeah. And all of those things wrapped up. And so we don't all, you know, think the same. And no. So we often do our communications just for the neurotypical, and you know.
You're so right. Whatever. I don't even think about it. I mean, you know, we always used to think about this is for a black person, this is for a white person, this is for men, this is for women. But there's so much more diversity than just that.
And I think you said that so nicely. So for me, it's there is a way to do things more inclusively, and it's to appeal to everyone without polarizing anyone. And you can also...
Which is a very delicate line, I would have thought, trying to walk that line but not piss someone off.
No, that's right. But I think there is a sweet spot. I'm not saying don't ever do marketing to men and don't ever do marketing to women. But just sometimes too, I think, you know, we've only got one budget. So you want to be as inclusive as you can and catch
absolutely all possibilities. And try and make everyone relate to it. That's
I'm a big advocate by that. So I do talks for people on teaching them a new way to look at things. And I widely distribute a checklist I've got for gender neutral communication. So you can get that. And I also...
maybe if I remember, and I don't even know how podcasts work at the moment, so anyone who's listening to this, I don't know whether it's possible. But if not, did you put it up in the She's the Boss Facebook group?
I think you should. I will.
So what we'll do, rather, because I was going to say let's attach it to the podcast, but I have no idea whether we can.
No.
So let's say there is a She's the Boss Facebook group, and that if you look for Anne Miles, you can do a search in Facebook groups for people.
Yeah,
you put it up, and that way people will be able to find it.
That'd be great. I think if more people can use it, that's my mission. So yeah, great.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so now we're back to apps. So the first one was WordSwag.
WordSwag for social media content and having a rant, you know, and saying whatever you feel like.
Okay.
And you can post straight to the channels as well from.
Oh yeah, great.
From it as well, so it's actually quite useful and fast.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is sort of just for fun, but it's actually also for emergency.
Yeah.
And it's called What Three Words.
Yeah, and three just, being the number three.
Yeah, number three.
Okay, yeah.
And WHAT.
I think I heard about this the other day, that one of the guys locally runs a thing called Humans of, you know, like the Humans of New York, but he does it for my local area, and he posted up and was I can't remember what they were, but you choose three words that kind of symbolise your area, is that right?
Yeah, so they worked out that there's more words than sort of numbers, and numbers are too hard for people to remember.
Yeah.
And so every... square meter on the earth has been mapped with three unique words. So here where we are in this part of the house, and it's actually vertical as well, I think. So this part of the house would have three different words. It might be banana, shirt and shoes or something.
Yeah.
And then another part would have something else. So it was designed to help in third world countries where they don't have a letterbox, for example.
Which makes sense, because, of course, if you live in the desert, you go on, 154 footsteps past the well and turn right at the goat or whatever.
Yeah. So now they just have this app and say, I'm at, these funny three words.
And didn't you say to me the other day that if you get lost in the bush or something, that would be how someone could find you? Yeah,
definitely.
Which is where I thought it sounded really interesting.
I think it's really useful and safe, so I often play with it just, because it's sort of interesting. Oh, what three words have we got here, and I'll just put it on for the fun of it.
So you can, with what three words, you can go to any place and just call up, where am I now, and it'll tell
that's
you
right, yeah.
what the three words
and
are.
And as a film producer in the past, sometimes we'd have... a film production in the middle of nowhere and, beside the river at the whatever and, the cars are parked at,
trying to work out where to tell people.
Earring and scales or something,
I love it.
But if you were definitely lost in the mountains, a lot of times people can even ring for help, but they can't tell people where they are. And so most people actually die just because they can't get found, not because they can't reach to get help. So if they can call on... get this app
and say I'm in,
these three words,
tongue, bush, whatever, and then they
the helicopter
find
just goes boom, there you are. Yeah,
okay, really clever. So now do you have a downtime app? Do you have a silly one? Like, I'm obsessed, my kids find it hilarious that I've been doing it for so many years with Candy Crush. Have you got a silly game or something that you love, an app on your phone?
So nerdy. I don't allow naps, those sort of games on my phone.
Okay.
But I do have one.
You could.
I'm such a dork. But I do have one thing, and I don't even know that I really believe in it.
Yeah.
So I do have a like a horoscope.
I would love that. What's that with? Which one is it?
So there's actually two. One's Jonathan Kaner.
Yes.
He's a legend in horoscopes.
He's dead now, though, I think.
I know. His son's taken over.
Oh, it's his son who's taken over, yeah.
But there's one called The Pattern, which I especially love. And that's sort of similar, but it's like they've made horoscope into kind of a contemporary patterns of behaviour. And I love reading it because whoever wrote it must love Sagittarians because I'm getting ego boost every day and going,
stuff.
Yeah. And it goes, you might be.
Because I'm always with horoscopes. I'm like, if it's a good one, I go, oh, that's awesome. I love it. And if it's a bad one, I go, I ignored that. Didn't even read it this week.
That's right. You look at it and you go, oh, this stuff's so hot anyway,
right? They don't know
what
they're talking about until you look at it and you go, oh, I love it that it says it's going to be a great week.
That's it. Yeah, so the pattern makes me feel good. Yeah.
Okay, so my last part of the podcast is going to be, assuming there are women out there that are thinking about setting up their own business or have just set one up, what would be three things that you have learned? I know it's really hard to distill this down, but three things that you have learned along the way that you would say to somebody who is starting out now.
Yeah. So I'm sort of picking it a bit out of just first
mind. Out of thin air.
I would definitely say take it easy. Like jumping out straight away I think is actually a pretty brave move and it's quite challenging and I think you can also be operating on a little bit of lack in the beginning. So I would recommend highly to do part-time first.
Oh, that's a good idea. Or a side hustle or something where you're not going to get stressed about building it up.
And prove your market first before you scale.
I have to say on the TV show, and I say to people, have you got any tips? And almost without fail, people are going, research. Just research first and find out that there's a market.
Yeah, super good advice. And as a marketer, like often people come to me thinking I'm going to be this miracle cure. And almost I want to make sure they're selling it without marketing first.
Yep.
Because otherwise you just blow your money. If you can't sell a good product, then marketing will make you far faster than before.
Right.
Good advice. Yeah, and the other advice, I mean, I feel like you have to love it, right? So
there's got to be some passion there.
Definitely,
because it might get very hard.
It does get really hard. And, I mean, I've even had a day a little while ago where I sat there at my desk and went, oh, this is kind of hard. If I was a lesser person, I'd probably burst into tears right now. But hold
but
it
I'm
together.
Not going to.
And I'm not going to, but I could.
Yeah,
and
no,
so
I
you do
it
need
gets
it.
Tough.
I think so. And the other thing that I would advise strongly about is I acquaint all of the success I've had so far, and I've had some wonderful things happen and awards and all sorts of stuff now, and I'm really quite chuffed by that. But I reckon the number one thing I've learned was that actually with LinkedIn, I didn't know the power of it early.
No, I didn't either. I've been very late to that party. I joined up probably, I reckon I was one of the early adopters, so I've been on it for like 10 or 12 years.
Yeah.
But it was so awful for so long.
Yeah.
I really couldn't bear going on there and seeing people talking about their great bloody courses or whatever, and there was just no interaction. There was nothing human about it.
No.
And then I jumped about 2 years ago and thought, I'm going to start looking at it like Facebook, but I'm going to do Facebook for business. So I'm not going to go on and talk about what I did on the weekend, but I am going to say I've just had a coffee with so-and-so or, you know, this is what I've learned today. And that's changed everything. And I just think it's really powerful now.
And especially when you are trying to start without a big lot of outlay.
That's right.
And so also for me, like LinkedIn's at a whole other level now because it's actually a marketing channel and, you know, I have some automations and all sorts of things that happen at a whole other level. And so there's even smaller businesses and consultants coming thinking they need more traditional marketing. I go, you know what, there's nothing performing better than this. And it's just like such an affordable way to get really good results.
And I would really actually extend that across all social media.
Yeah.
So LinkedIn is amazing, but it really depends where your market is. So if you're targeting mums or women, Facebook is amazing.
Agree.
LinkedIn is a great way to get to blokes because there are more men than women on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And only 1% of people post. That's the thing that made me really sit up and take notice. So there's 500 million people plus on LinkedIn, but hardly anyone posts.
Yeah.
So once you start posting, you'll really get some traction. But the other day we were talking with in my Handle Your Own PR group with somebody who's gone really hard on Pinterest. Now, she was talking about with Pinterest, she showed us some stats. It absolutely blew my tiny mind, I have to say, because I've always thought of Pinterest as being scrapbook. It's kind of like for the scrapbooking types. Do you know what I mean?
That's actually a little bit of a secret one that I
awful.
Do.
Oh, you do it.
I collect up housey and house kind of designs.
So I go on there. So she did this presentation where she said she has started putting up her blog on Pinterest. So she puts, you know, the first part of the blog and then come to my website.
Oh.
And she did this just as a trial. So she's got no followers, I think 69 followers or something like that. And she got something like 60,000 people
her
blog.
Wow.
And I was like, you are mad. Wow. And then I thought, okay, so she did this little presentation for us and I went on to Pinterest to just have a look. Because I set up an account, I don't know, bloody 10 years ago or something.
Yeah.
And I go in and have a look and there were some seriously high profile people in business that, you know, because what happens when you go on Pinterest is it goes, someone was on 2 weeks ago, someone was on, you know, with the people that you know. And it was like really high profile people and they'd all been on in the last couple of weeks. And
That's
it's interesting that you say it's your secret because I think it's the secret of a lot of people.
And I think you're right. It has to be like really in your niche and where they sit. And so for Pinterest, if you've got a product.
Yep.
And particularly if it's got an aesthetic or you can make something with it.
No, but I mean, I've seen this with advertising. I've seen it with PR as well. Like they're all doing really interesting posts. And the other one that I would have to say, because obviously my background's in PR, is that all the journalists are on Twitter. So Twitter is massive.
Yeah.
But what somebody said to me the other day that I thought was really interesting is they said Twitter is so massive that if you put up your post within 10 minutes, it won't be able to be found by anyone because there are just so many people posting.
That's very
So I thought that was really interesting as well, you know, to sort of start putting those kind of social platforms into perspective. So LinkedIn is amazing for business. So is Facebook, actually. I mean, on lots and lots and lots of levels, particularly if you're targeting women. Yeah. Pinterest is great, but you need to manipulate it and play with it if you want to do it for business. But there are seriously a lot of business people on it. So you could play around and get a bit of profile and then Twitter for... Have we missed anything?
So maybe were you thinking the same as me here? Because what we're talking about are lots of different channels, but... It's when someone really drills into one and does it super, super well. That's, I feel like that's more useful.
That's actually really, I think that I'm glad you said that. And I would say that I split myself between Facebook and LinkedIn and I wish I could choose one. But I feel like my markets are on both, but I do different kind of messaging.
Yeah.
So I do take, I normally will put it up on LinkedIn as my sort of slightly more businessy, but I always put a story now with my stuff. I used to just put up little short ones and now I'd like to try to do a bit of a story and I've got better engagement. And then I will put the same one up on Facebook, but I'll tweak it and make it more personal and maybe show a little bit of a chink in the armour. I kind of like that.
Yeah.
On Facebook, I think you've got to do a bit of, I was sick yesterday or I wasn't great or I stuffed up and this is what I did. I feel like that works better on that kind of a...
That's a new platform. Thing, though, I think, where we are allowed to be a bit vulnerable at the moment.
Yeah, it's kind of a COVID thing, and I'm hoping it comes out the other end, but I agree. I think
it's great.
You're allowed to show some sort of weakness and vulnerability now, and people go, oh, they're real, I can relate to them. Whereas I think, you know, I mean, I could talk for ages about this whole, the superficiality of how you look, what you wear, you know, like Louis Vuitton as a brand now apparently has had 90% reduction in sales. And I'm like, because they're all about, it's all about when you're out and about being seen with their stuff. So all of a sudden their market's just disappeared because if you can't be seen with their handbag for $20,000, why buy it?
I'm wondering, was it them or was it, it was a perfume company with a really elite perfume that was started thinking the same thing, but instantly, very early on, they switched to making a hand sanitizer. And so then it was like one doing a good thing by the world, but they had enough foresight to go, okay, well, everyone's in lockdown, they're not even going to be giving a damn about how they smell.
No, that's right. That's smart. Right. And the other one that was really, the other ones that have been really smart are the distilleries. You know, like the gin and the booze distilleries have all gone to doing those alcohol sanitizers and they've worked really well too.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we're going to have to call it a day. It's been fantastic to talk to you. Everyone, this is Anne Miles from Suits and Sneakers. How does anyone get hold of you, Anne?
The easiest would be the website. So it's suitsandsneakers.global.
Yep.
So SUITSANDSNEAKERS.
And did you see my little post the other day where you went, some suits can be sneakers too, and the other thing? And I said, are they snoots or are they suitors? I'm so witty in my own lunchtime sometimes. All right, thank you very, very much for joining us today. I hope you've been really enjoyed it.
I have enjoyed it. I'm so grateful to be here. Thank you.
It's been great. All right, and we will look forward to seeing you at the next podcast. Bye. I hope you've enjoyed this She's the Boss chat episode. It was great to have you here. If you want to stay in touch, you might also like some of the other things that we've got going on with She's the Boss. Firstly, I've got the She's the Boss show, which is on Ticker TV. Now, you can watch that either on tickertv.com.au or you can download the Ticker app from any of the app stores. So Apple and Android, and they've got an app that is for your phone, for your iPad or tablet, and for the smart TV. Or you could join us for our free Zoom lunches for female founders that we hold online. The best way to do any of these things really is go to shestheboss.com.au, and on there you can register for the lunches, and I've also got links to the website. So either way, I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm really enjoying digging down and getting down to the nitty-gritty with these women, and I hope you'll join me for the next episode.